This is All About Living with Carol Colby. All About Living is brought to you by Gunderson Funeral Home Cremation Care, Turville Bay MRI and Radiation Oncology Center in Madison, Prevagen, Home Health United, The Medicine Shop Monona, Independent Living. All About Living with Carol Colby.
Good afternoon and welcome again to All About Living. This is Memorial Weekend and this segment of our program is brought to you by Independent Living, your connection to an independent life, and Gunderson Funeral and Cremation Care, the Life Celebration Center. I'm Carol Colby, and remember this program is also available. It is posted on carolcobyradio.com. That's Carol Colby, K-O-B-Y radio.com. So if you're not available to listen on a noontime and on a Saturday, or if you want to pass this information on to family or friends, please know that you can go there anytime and the program is available to you at your convenience. Well, this is Memorial Weekend, as I said, and it's typically a time when we get together with family and friends and we do the cookouts depending on the nice weather and perhaps have some games in the park. But more importantly, it's a weekend that we honor our veterans. And I hope that as we go through this weekend that each one of us is taking a moment to honor those who have served in the armed forces, who have protected us, who have given of themselves for the defense and the service of our country and for each one of us, because it is important that we remember them and we thank them and we pay tribute to them. Last weekend at Lambeau Field, it was the LZ Lambeau event, LZ standing for landing zone, I guess, LZ Lambeau. And at that time, we gave thousands of American Vietnam veterans the welcome home they never received after the war. But they weren't the only soldiers being recognized, and it was really important that the Vietnam veterans be recognized. It's way too late in coming, I think, just a personal commentary. But Wisconsin veterans from Vietnam really insisted this year that the Hmong veterans have an important role in the weekend's activities. And at LZ Lambeau last weekend, there was an exhibit and presentation dedicated to the thousands of Hmong soldiers who fought on the side of the United States in the Vietnam War and the secret war in Laos. And the secret war, which was really, until now, one of the best-kept secrets, I think, of our nation, this was an operation funded by the CIA. The Hmong soldiers were trained for missions, including cutting off North Vietnam's supply lines. They were fighting the communists in Laos. And also, a really important thing that we keep hearing from the veterans again and again is that the Hmong were there for the airmen who were shot down. So as we pay tribute to veterans, hopefully because of this recognition that the Hmong veterans from the Vietnam War and the secret war in Laos are receiving this year, we will be paying tribute to them as well. And we're going to talk about that on our program today. Joining me as my guest is Zur Vang. And just to let you know, when I say Zur, it's actually spelled Y-E-R, but Zur in the Hmong culture is the spelling is Y-E-R, but the Y is pronounced Z. And Zur is an attorney by profession, and she's a graduate, a 2001 graduate of the UW-Madison Law School. She works for the state of Wisconsin, and she is currently president of the Wisconsin Asian Bar Association. A few weeks ago, she spoke at our downtown Rotary meeting and told us and really enlightened the whole room of people about the Hmong culture and particularly the involvement in the Vietnam War. So I have invited Zur to join us this weekend so she can enlighten all of you, because it is just fascinating. And we know about the Hmong culture. We hear about the Hmongs. If we go, I think any of us who go to the farmer's market on Saturday mornings, we appreciate the Hmongs in particularly because they have the freshest and the healthiest vegetables and produce available. But there's so much more to the Hmong culture than that. And Zur, I welcome you to All About Living, and I'm just so appreciative that you are here with us today.
Well, Kara, thank you so much for having me today. It's a pleasure and honor to be able to talk about a subject that I think is dear to my heart, as well as I think in light of you mentioning that this is a weekend that's a special weekend to honor all our veterans, and in particular for me to talk a little bit about the connection between this weekend's celebration of Memorial Weekend, as well as sort of the contribution of the Hmong veterans in our American history.
Let's start with that, since it is Memorial Weekend and the Hmong veterans from the Vietnam War are getting the recognition that they deserve. Explain how all of that came about, and I'll let you begin at what you think is the beginning so we have a full understanding of the evolution of the Hmong involvement in the Vietnam War.
Right. You had mentioned a little bit, I think, in your introduction about sort of the involvement of the Hmong people with the Vietnam War. And what many people may not be aware of is that at the time that the United States was involved in the Vietnam conflict, there was also covert operations occurring in Southeast Asia. And in particular, what's important to remember is sort of how the Hmong got involved. And you talked about a little bit about the CIA's solicitation of the Hmong people. And during the period of 1963 until the end of the war, when the United States pulled out of Vietnam, in the late 50s to the early 60s, you had a period where the Hmong people, in terms of geography, primarily lived in the hill tribes or the highlands of Laos, and they're very well versed and knew the terrain of Laos very well. And so, what you have here is that when the Vietnam conflict occurred, the land. Laos borders right next to North and South Vietnam. And so what you have is the United States military recognizing that Laos was, although at that time a neutral country, but Laos was also a really pivotal country or location where they needed the assistance to be able to use that location to be able to infiltrate and be able to divert some of the communist activities that were attempting to send military weapons down the Ho Chi Minh Trail. And if you ever get a chance to look at a map of Laos, the Ho Chi Minh Trail is really a really lengthy trail that is the backbone of Laos. And that trail becomes really important to understanding sort of how the Hmong people get involved, because that trail runs from northern to southern Laos. Mm-hmm. And the Hmong people occupied those areas. And the Hmong people knew that terrain very well. And so when the United States realized that the Ho Chi Minh Trail was in terms of a location that needed to be addressed in terms of being able to have someone cover that area, they were able to...
Why was the Ho Chi Minh Trail so critical?
The Ho Chi Minh Trail...
What was happening right, on that was, trail that it had to be protected and covered?
Right. The Ho Chi Minh Trail was a location where the North Vietnamese, Viet Minh communists were using that trail to transport weapons and intelligence down to South Vietnam as well and throughout Laos. And so in order for the United States to be able to combat and divert some of those activities, they needed to be able to find out the intelligence and be able to intercept some of those intelligence. And so, and the United States military, not having the expertise and not knowing the terrain well, came to understand that there was this Hmong gentleman leader, military leader for the Hmong community that resided and also occupied in those areas, and they met with General Vang Pao and his leaders, military leaders, and struck up a conversation as well as an agreement that says, we understand that your Hmong people have a very deep knowledge of this terrain in this area, and we would like to enter into agreement with you to have you help us in this campaign against communism.
But we're not going to tell anybody.
But because at this time, Laos is a neutral country, so this has to be covert operation, but mm-hmm. we need your assistance. And so the agreement that was struck up was that the United States military, and particularly the CIA with the covert operations, entered into an agreement with the Hmong people, and particularly in the military leader at that time, to say that we will we want your assistance in diverting some of these military activities to help combat communism in Southeast Asia, and particularly because of where the location of Laos was, and particularly because your people, the Hmong people, knew this terrain. And in return, if anything should happen, the United States will take care of you and your people.
So that was the agreement. So that was the reward to the Hmong people, that the United States would take care of you.
Right. And I think, you know, in addition to that, I think part of the reason why the Hmong people understood this is because they also, too, were experiencing and actually seeing the results of that. And they wanted to also support, campaigns or efforts to fight communism, because the Hmong people, for a long history, are people that values independence and freedom. And understanding that in terms of a larger global effort, they did agree with the United States and understood the United States campaign and effort to combat communism.
The veterans make reference to the fact that the Hmong people were so critical. They took care of the airmen who were shot down. What other things did they do to cover that Ho Chi Minh Trail, right, and to protect the American soldiers?
Right. A major force of the Hmong soldiers and veterans, the primary duty was, because they knew the terrain really well, that was the part of the majority of the work, was rescuing United States air military men who were shot down, and rescuing them and taking them to safety and refuge. But in addition to that, some of the Hmong soldiers actually were trained to be pilot, and one of the very first Hmong pilot was trained and was able to actually fly with the United States Air Military at that time. And so, in addition to just rescuing, they were also participating in training, and then also participating on the ground with actually combat of activities as well. So, but most of the, you know, and you had understanding the Hmong people, we're talking about thousands of men and boys at that time, early as 10 years old, that were being recruited to participate because of just the conditions in which they found themselves in. And so really anything from rescuing U.S. military to diverting and participating in efforts to divert those military activities along the Ho Chi Minh Trail, to actually participating in flying airplanes and also conducting those air military activities. Those were sort of the range, and understanding that they're pivotal parts or important parts in the terrain of Laos that also became important areas in which the United States also used as their base to be able to continue the covert operations.
Our guest today on All About Living is Zur Vang. Zur is of Hmong heritage, and she's telling us about the Hmong involvement in the Vietnam War on this Memorial Weekend as we pay tribute to our veterans, and particularly this year, the Vietnam veterans. And the veterans themselves, our American Vietnam veterans, did not want the Hmong to go unnoticed and unrecognized this year, because they're so appreciative for the work that they did and the help that they gave the United States in the secret army in which they functioned, covering and rescuing soldiers from the Ho Chi Minh Trail, which was a critical trail that was involved in the Vietnam War, going from the northern part of Laos down to the southern part. And it was a trail that the North Vietnamese used to get equipment and to get down to South Vietnam for their battle in the war. That's it in a nutshell, but we are so appreciative to have you here, and we're going to continue our conversation with Zur after these messages from our sponsors. You're listening to All About Living here on Madison 1670 WTDY. I'm Carol Kobe, and we'll be right back.
This is All About Living with Carol Kobe, Madison 1670 WTDY.
And we're back with our program. This segment is brought to you by Turville Bay MRI and Radiation Oncology Center in Madison, where expertise with compassion is powerful medicine, and Home Health United. You've got a friend right here, online at homehealthunited.org. And we're talking about the Vietnam War, paying tribute to all of our veterans. This is Memorial Weekend, and Memorial Day, we're certainly going to be taking time to do just that. But in particular, the Vietnam veterans insist this year, and I think it is just wonderful for all of us to learn more about the Hmong people and their involvement in the Vietnam War and how critical their role was to helping the United States and U.S. airmen, particularly on the Ho Chi Minh Trail. And with me in the studio is Zur Vang. Zur is an attorney, a graduate of the UW-Madison Law School, and president of the Wisconsin Asian Bar Association. Her heritage is Hmong, and she is bringing to us the story of the Hmong people, their involvement in the Vietnam War. But we want to talk about more about the Hmong culture, because I think so little of us know so little about the Hmong culture and the Hmong people. And I didn't realize until recently that Wisconsin and Minnesota and California have the largest populations of Hmong people. And you are representative of one of the families that came to Wisconsin. How did the Hmong people get from their heritage? Now, your heritage goes back to China, I understand, right?
Right.
Can you quickly take us through the evolution of the Hmong people, where they were in China and then lived in the mountains and were nomads through Laos and Southeast Asia, and how you got to the United States?
Right, sure, Carol. Just a quick timeline, historical timeline perspective.
Yes.
Earliest tracings with historians and anthropologists is that the Hmong people originated in China, and in particularly this was in 200 BC. To at least about 1810 in terms of sort of the occupation of the Hmong people in China. And particularly the areas in which the Hmong people have been known to have originated from was from the Yunnan province in China along the Yellow River. And because of the history of China and the hundreds of different ethnic groups in China, the changes and the turmoil that happened in China during those periods, the Hmong people became persecuted. And actually, the Hmong people in China were referred to as the Miao. And so they were a group that were also persecuted by the dominant Chinese there. And because of the persecution and this. And
so
the
they
civil,
were a minority group they were that minority was persecuted.
Right. Because of that experience, many of the Hmong people then started migrating to Southeast Asia, approximately in the early 1800s, and then settled in most of Southeast Asia, but primarily in Laos, and primarily because of the agricultural and lifestyle that they had. They settled in the highlands of Laos, where they could continue to live in peace and start their families and their communities. And so you had primarily in Laos, northern and southern Laos and the highlands, Hmong communities throughout those, and very well-connected communities in which they governed themselves and operated and were pretty much on their own and had their own internal dispute resolution process, their own leaders and their own clans in which to deal with conflict or to deal with any positive or happy occasions in which how to govern those mm-hmm. particular communities. And so then during that period, you have the Hmong people residing and living and making a new life for them in Southeast Asia. And so, as we talked a little bit earlier, that's the other part of the timeline. And then post-1975, then after the Vietnam War, what happens is you have an exodus of the Hmong people fleeing Laos because they were being persecuted because of their involvement with the secret war and being allies of the United States. They then flee Laos, and particularly fleeing Laos to Thailand to seek refuge. And eventually, because of that, being resettled in different parts of the world, and particularly because, obviously, of where we are today, many of those Hmong refugees were resettled in the United States. And as you mentioned, the three states with the largest Hmong populations today are California with the largest, and then Minnesota and Wisconsin coming in third. And approximately about 45,000 Hmong people today live in Wisconsin.
Now, I want to find out more why these three states, but before that, did the U.S. government, did the military offer you protection because of the involvement in the Vietnam War? And did they say, we will take care of you and we will provide homes for you?
I think because of the agreement, understanding that we had talked a little bit earlier about the agreement between the United States CIA and then the Hmong leadership, military leadership at that time, and because of what happened, eventually United States did feel obligated that maybe perhaps we should help these people. And because of that, I think that there was advocacy done apart with the U.S. military, also recognizing that we do need to help these people. These people are being persecuted and killed because of their alliance with us. Mm-hmm. And fortunately, there were the first wave of folks that were able to be resettled were in the late 70s, but many of those were not fortunate to be airlifted out of Laos and seek refuge. It wasn't until the late 70s and after 1975 to the 80s that any formal process was in place to help process and accept Hmong refugees into the United States.
Okay, and you were refugees, not immigrants.
I mean, right.
And there's a difference.
There is a difference.
Can you explain the difference?
Right. I think in terms of understanding that the context of immigration policy and immigration context, immigrants are folks, are individuals coming to the United States that are non-citizens. That's a broad category. Now, underneath that category, there are individuals coming to the United States as refugees, as my people, as my family did. And refugees explain the situation in which individuals who are coming to the United States and seeking refuge because they can't return back to their country of origin for fear of persecution based on their national origin, the political affiliation. And those are the reasons why the Hmong people, majority of those Hmong people coming to the United States were entered as refugees and seeking refuge in the United States. And the United States immigration policies allows for certain numbers of refugees to enter the United States. And so in the early 80s, the Federal Office of Refugee Resettlement and with U.S. immigration policy, they were able to permit numbers of hundreds of Hmong refugees into the United States. So not just Hmong refugees, Carol, at that time, but refugees from Southeast Asia, those folks who also were being persecuted and killed. So you also included Vietnamese refugees and Cambodian.
Yep,
mm-hmm. Correct.
Yes. All right. And the Hmong in particular, came to California, Minnesota, and Wisconsin. Why those three states?
Right. Maybe understanding the tropical climate in Laos, maybe California would be understandable. And then the rest of you,
Wisconsin,
but Minnesota and Wisconsin.
Well, you explained when you got off
sure.
the plane it was winter and you saw all of this white stuff and you had no idea
right,
what it was.
Right, right. And the resettlement.
Voila,
right.
Welcome snow. Hello.
Right. And resettlement, understanding that at that time, the United States needed assistance. And I think the church-affiliated groups, for instance, I can tell you my personal experience, the Lutheran Church affiliated were instrumental in helping the U.S. Office of Refugee Resettlement in helping resettle refugees, Southeast Asian refugees in their 80s.
And there are a lot of Lutherans in Minnesota and Wisconsin.
Correct. And
yes.
So, and part of that is the well connection, I mean, the really deep connection of the Lutheran churches and the different churches that were able to help provide assistance to refugees during those times. And so because of that connection, and obviously there were other Hmong refugees that were resettled in different parts of the United States, but because of the Hmong clan system, when you have family, extended families that are perhaps resettled in different parts of the country, you want to remain close with them. And so because a majority of them were resettled in California and Wisconsin and Minnesota.
And California, was it because of the environment?
Well, I think California, it was appealing, but I think just because of the, you know, when U.S. policies are in place in terms of which communities and states are able to accept and have the resources available to help refugees. That's how some of those states saw maybe larger numbers of refugees
okay.
at that time. And so,
did you have to go through citizenship process?
And some, yep. With refugee status, you enter the United States as a refugee and you have that refugee status with you for a year, and then then the process that you can then apply for legal permanent residency as a legal permanent resident in the United States, and eventually then become eligible to apply for citizenship, as I did in my own personal experience. And mm-hmm. so my family came in as refugees, and then we became lawful permanent residents. And then when I turned 18, actually, I then filed for and actually applied for citizenship. So I'm a naturalized citizen. And many Hmong people today are naturalized citizens.
Now, your family, let's just talk a little bit personally about how your family, where your family came from and how you got here and how you ended up in Wisconsin. And you were telling me in the break that you're the youngest of 12 children?
Correct, correct.
Wow.
And, my personal story is that my family was one of the families that had to flee Laos and an escape. And my family crossed the Mekong River and went through a very arduous journey to seek refuge and safety. And at that time in the 70s, in the mid-70s, after 1975, Thailand, many Hmong people were crossing. As I told you a little bit earlier about, there's this Mekong River that actually borders between Laos and Thailand that becomes a really critical part of the history and the journey of the Hmong people seeking refuge and safety. Many Hmong people died crossing the Mekong River trying to seek refuge in Thailand and other parts of Southeast Asia, primarily because at that time, Thailand was also a neutral country, and Thailand was the closest in terms of geography, and many Hmong people were able to get across the Mekong River and seek safety in Thailand. And at that time, many of the families, the very first families that sought safety in Thailand, the Thai government and officials were not prepared to be able to put up housing. And so it wasn't until years later that they were able to put together, and even then, refugee camps, when you visit those camps back in the late 70s, conditions were not ideal, but they had to help and deal with these refugees that were coming in from Laos. And so fortunately for myself and my family, they were able to cross and seek safety in Thailand. And actually, I was actually born in a refugee camp in Thailand.
Wow.
I was born in Nong Khai camp at that time in 1975.
We're going to stop for a break, and we want to hear the continuation of your story of how you came to Wisconsin. Our guest today on All About Living is Zer Vang, and she is a member of the Hmong people, and she is also president of the Wisconsin Asian Bar Association. We're talking about the Hmong's involvement in the Vietnam War and how they were of great assistance to the U.S. government and the U.S. military. And we're also learning about the Hmong culture. And we just appreciate your being here, and we'll be back with more in our conversation with Zer after these messages from our sponsors. You're listening to All About Living here on Madison 1670 WTDY.
This is All About Living with Carol Colby, Madison 1670, WTDY.
Welcome back to All About Living. This segment of our program is brought to you by the Medicine Shop Monona, caring beyond prescriptions. And our guest today is Zer Vang, and Zer is president of the Wisconsin Asian Bar Association, and we're talking about the Hmong culture. We've taken time to pay tribute to the Hmong people who were participants in the Vietnam War, and the Vietnam veterans have made it clear this year, as they have been honored, to make sure that the Hmong are recognized for the great work they did. They were part of the secret army in Laos and were very helpful in protecting Americans on the Ho Chi Minh Trail that goes through Laos. And Zer, your family came here as refugees from Thailand, and you were actually born in a refugee camp in Thailand. You were the youngest of 12 children, and you were, between 4 and 5, actually, when you came here? So you don't have too many memories of the refugee camp.
Correct. I was about 4 and a half when my family and I came to the United States. And so my earliest memory, actually don't have memories of the camp experience. And so my earliest memory is a memory of arriving in the United States and seeing this white thing on the ground and not knowing at that time that it was snow, but yeah. It was just really cold. Those are my earliest memory of coming and arriving to the United States.
My family, you arrived in Iowa, I understand.
Correct. We first, my family and I first arrived in Iowa, and we were sponsored, and also the Lutheran Church in Iowa at that time in Decorah, Iowa, was really instrumental in helping my family adjust to a new life and a new culture, and helping my family acclimate itself both, weather-wise and culturally to this new country.
That must have been quite a leap leap for them when all of these children.
Right. I can only imagine. I mean, I think as maybe as children, it might be easier for us to, acclimate and adapt to a new surrounding. But for folks who were much older, like my parents and grandparents, it was an adjustment that probably as many have experienced as sort of a shock to the system. And even with some of the, as I talked to Hmong elders today, remembering the experiences that they had in Laos and in Thailand and coming to the United States, there's still a lot of Hmong elders that are still experiencing post-traumatic stress disorder because of the war experience, because of the horrendous and very emotionally, psychologically, I think, period in which they had to leave their country and come to a different country where they didn't know any individuals and know the country, their language, or the customs. And so it's really important, I think, for our Hmong community and the mainstream community to be able to acknowledge that there's still a lot of Hmong elders that need services because of that experience. And so I think what's been fortunate, I think maybe for the younger Hmong generation, is that they've had a little bit more time to adapt and acculturate to a new country and a new system.
Well, I think it's really important for us here in Wisconsin to understand the Hmong culture and to be more united with them. We are one of the three states that has the highest Hmong population, and primarily because of the Lutheran Church, who were the sponsors for so many Hmong people. And so I think that's why you said they particularly came to Wisconsin and Minnesota, and then California being the third state. You ended up going from Iowa to La Crosse then. And was that because of the Lutheran Church up in La Crosse, and they were able to help settle you there?
What's really important about the Hmong community and culture is that there's a clan system that plays a really pivotal role in helping keep the network of Hmong communities together. And so when we had Hmong people as refugees arriving and being resettled in the United States, eventually in my personal experience and my family, we were resettled and lived in Iowa for a couple years with the assistance of the church and the small Hmong community there as well. But my family wanted to at that time be connected with the other Vain clan members and family members, and so that's why we then moved to La Crosse, Wisconsin, which is just a couple hours away from where we were at that time in Iowa. And so part of sort of the secondary, third migration, even within the United States, is the attempt for Hmong communities to be really tight knit and to remain with their clan systems and remain with their family, extended family, and that's a really important tradition and really important value that continues today.
Explain the clan system. Your last name is Vang, and you said there might be just 18 names, surnames?
Right.
Amongst Hmong people?
In the Hmong community and culture, there are 18 clan, or in this case, surnames or last names. And so, and that makes it, these clan system operates in such a way that it helps to, each clan system has its own internal way in which to govern the clans and the clan members. And so, as you said, my last name is Vang, so I belong to the Vang clan, and my dad was a Vang. And so any particular cultural traditions or rules, I would abide by the Vang clan system if there were.
Are you all blood relatives?
Not necessarily blood relatives. The example that I give is the reason, sort of the importance of understanding clan system is sort of the future of generations, is that if you belong to a Vang clan, in this case myself, I'm a Vang, I would not be able to marry within the same Vang clan, even if we are not blood related. But I could certainly choose a husband that is outside of the Vang clan. Any of the other 17 clan would be...
What are two or three of the names that would be other clans?
The other clans that are out there would be Moa or Shang or Vu or Li and Tao. So those are just some common last names that you'll hear here in Wisconsin, as well as throughout the United States, but there are a total of about 18 different clan last names.
For those of us who saw the movie Gran Torino, we had some exposure to the Hmong culture in that movie. I believe. And was that pretty accurate?
I would say, as I commented at the Rotary, that I wouldn't necessarily use Gran Torino as an educational video to introduce or to understand the Hmong culture, but it certainly was a good tool to introduce mainstream Hollywood to knowing about this particular population in the United States. And so not everything in the movie, I think Gran Torino is really Hollywood, so Hollywood always tries to, I think, exaggerate or tell a story, but I think in understanding and wanting to know about the Hmong culture and history, mm-hmm. it's probably most important than to actually talk to your Hmong community members and your neighbors who are Hmong and understanding the culture and the history.
For those people who don't, it was a good introduction, and you have warm feelings, and you wanted to get to know the people better and had an appreciation if you'd had no exposure. So in that way, it was a positive first step, at least.
Right. I think if nothing else, it really was an opportunity to expose people to understand that there are this group of people, the Hmong people, and understanding sort of how did they arrive in the United States, and piques the interest. And I think that definitely mm-hmm. is. And there are scenes in which we talk about the importance of family gatherings. And I think there are a couple scenes in Gran Torino, of course, where there's always the food and the gathering mm-hmm. and Clint Eastwood's character and coming to understand and appreciate that, family means is a really important piece of the Hmong community. And
yeah, talk about true. The clan system and family and how you actually, the specifics of it. Those things that you honor and pay tribute to,
right?
The rituals,
right?
Too.
I think there are important rites of passages for a Hmong member in a Hmong community at a time when someone's born, and there are certain traditions that go along with at birth, and then at times when you pass through the rites of passage and you become into adult, and most of that's marked by marriage, of course, in that situation, and coming to be a woman and a man and a mother and a father. And then at the time, when you're at the end of your life, at death. And those are three sort of, I would say, important pieces of a Hmong person's life in terms of the identity and the roles that are crucial to understanding your history and your culture. And that's when tradition comes into play. And so at birth, understanding that, when a person is born, we have really specific roles and where we are. If you are, if you're born as a girl, there's a particular role in which you play in that family. And if you're born as a boy, you have a particular role, especially if you're the oldest firstborn boy, and what that responsibility is in terms of carrying the legacy and the name of your specific family there. And then at the time when a Hmong woman or a Hmong man gets married, the traditions and cultures involved in the marriage ceremony and joining families together, not just the two individuals are getting married, but really joining the families of the groom side and the bride side together, and the connection and the relation that's built because of that, and the extended family members mm-hmm. because of that joining of the two different members of the clan system.
And there's great respect paid to the elders.
Correct. And I don't think it's necessarily unique to the Hmong community. I think other communities and other ethnic groups and particularly do pay respect to the elders. But I think the reason why, in terms of what's unique about the Hmong culture with respect to the respect and understanding Hmong elders, is that traditionally history and culture and traditions were passed through by elders. And elders were the ones who were the storytellers and the ones who held the history of the Hmong people. And it wasn't until the 1950s that the Hmong people had a written language. So it was an oral history and tradition in which elders play a crucial role in passing on the stories and passing on the traditions to perhaps the eldest son or the eldest daughter in that family, and understanding sort of the tradition and history of that particular family. So that's why elders are so respected and valued. And in our culture, in the perception is that when a grandparent gets old, there's resistance in sending that grandparent to a nursing home or to an elderly home or assisted living. In fact, they want to keep the grandparent home in their nuclear family because that grandparent plays a really important role. That the grandparent, although maybe physically not able to do as much, still is an important piece of that family.
We're going to stop for our final break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about the Hmong culture and how you're becoming more Americanized, and if that's a good or bad, or if there are a few things that you could be teaching us that perhaps the two cultures, the American culture and the Hmong culture, can intermix a little bit more and have the benefit of each. So we're talking this today with Zer Vang, and she is president of the Wisconsin Asian Bar Association. She is Hmong, and she's talking about the Hmong culture with us. And we'll be back with our final minutes with Zer after these messages from our sponsors.
This is All About Living with Carol Colby, Madison 1670, WTDY.
Welcome back to our final minutes with our guest today on All About Living, Zer Vang, who is president of the Wisconsin Asian Bar Association. And Zer is Hmong, and she's been talking about not only the Hmong culture, but the Hmong involvement in the Vietnam War and how critical the Hmong people were during the Vietnam War in protecting and giving aid and assistance to our U.S. Army and American soldiers and our Vietnam veterans. And this year they're getting special recognition for that role, so it seems particularly appropriate that we have Zer on with us this Memorial Saturday. We've been talking now about the Hmong culture, and you were describing your clan system and the certain roles, the rituals of the birth and the marriage and the death and the respect for elders. And you also have some spiritual aspects to your clan system and your rituals. They involve shamans and the animism. And those are the words that I have. Can you explain their role and what they are?
Right. Briefly, the Hmong culture, in terms of its spiritual belief, is rooted in animism. And animism, briefly to explain that, is it's a concept in which a people believing in spirits, good spirits, bad spirits, evil spirits, and that every object, every human being, every object, even a rock, has a spirit, and trees have spirits. And so understanding the coexistence of good and bad spirits and different spirits and living in that. And so when, in particularly, animism and shamanism or shamans come into play when there is conflict, and particularly if there's sickness or health issues, or someone is experiencing an uncomfortable or perhaps being sick, and then they would then solicit the assistance of a shaman. And a shaman is a spiritual healer. The shaman traditionally have been more male occupied roles, but there are female shamans too. And so both and when a particular person, let's say a Hmong person, is sick, they would seek the assistance of a shaman to come and heal and come and negotiate with particular spirits to bring back the good spirit, or to even bring back the soul and the spirit of the individual person. And oftentimes what's sort of a classical case in which to solicit the help of a shaman is if someone is ill and there's a belief that that person's spirit has left them. The shaman is the vehicle in which to utilize, and the shaman becomes the negotiator between the physical world and the spiritual world. And that shaman then negotiates with the spirits to bring back, if there's a bad spirit that's taken away the individual's spirit, and that's why they've been sick, that shaman is the one that's responsible and has the power to be able to negotiate and bring the someone's spirit back and bring that person back to peace and health. And
do you use the medical system too?
Right. And I think, you know, nowadays, both Western medicine and shamanism are used interchangeably with the Hmong community. And there are some Hmong members who still practice shamanism. And actually, an increasing number of Hmong people have converted and adopted Christianity too as the religious base belief. But many Hmong people still participate and engage in shamanism.
Well, it's not that different than what we're doing holistically with meditation and some of the Eastern movements and the stress relievers and those kinds of activities.
Right. And I think, you know, you'll hear of cases and situations in which there's a conflict between the belief of using cultural animism, shamanism, spirit healing versus Western medicine if someone has cancer or someone has a serious illness. And, you know, families have to negotiate and work that out between themselves in terms of, you know, cultural beliefs and understanding Western medicine and modern technology about being able to seek medicine mm-hmm. to be able to cure a particular illness.
Now, the Hmong people have been here about 30 years, which is really a short time. And how have you integrated into the American culture? And is it constant evolution? And I suspect that the young people coming up, you know, they get Americanized and fairly quickly. But what are some of the areas of struggle? What about education? Are the women in the families encouraged to get full education? Certainly you are a graduate of law school, a good example of that.
And I'm very grateful. Yes. I think traditionally and historically, the Hmong tradition is more of a patriarchal system. And so back in the olden days, actually, if there was an opportunity, if a family had money, they would actually send their oldest son to go to school to get formal education, and the daughters were expected to stay home and help the mother care for the home in the domestic sphere, and the boys were expected to help out, of course, in the house too. But in terms of formal education, men and boys were given the opportunity. And in the United States, what's been a real challenge, I think, in the Hmong community, when you talk about the cultural kind of challenges in the early 80s and even in the 90s and even today, is sort of this reversal of gender roles, reversal of family roles, because what happened in the early 80s when you had Hmong refugees coming in, it was that you had elderly parents who were who didn't know the language, expected to work and obviously provide for the family, and they didn't know the language. But then you had children who were given the opportunity to go to school and get an education. And so, and in a sense, if my experience, I'm sure, was very similar to other Hmong family experience, I became the sort of cultural broker for my mom because I was fortunate to be educated in the formal American education system. I went with my mom everywhere, to the grocery store, to the laundromat, to the bank, to translate, interpret for her, basically, and to help her understand sort of the different American systems. And so many, what you see is sort of this kind of dynamic reversal of, you know, parents mm-hmm. and elders being the ones to be respected and listened to, and children to respect elders. And then you get to the United States and you see this flip-flop where children are then depended on as sort of the cultural broker and explaining and interpreting for parents and grandparents. And so there is that piece of it that created conflict and created, I think, disruption in sort of the understanding that the roles in which mm-hmm. family members play.
And is it just a matter of time? It's a process.
Right.
It's a transition. It can't be an abrupt, well, now we're here and all of a sudden we understand all of this.
Correct. And I think most immigrant experiences is similar to that in terms of the aggregation of like Hmong people and the immigrants coming to the United States and adopting and adapting to different systems. And so,
what's the most difficult for you
in terms of
living in America and adapting to our culture?
I think for my personal experience, I think I've been very fortunate to have a really supportive family. And so I think trying to balance the cultures, and I live in both American and Hmong culture, but I've been very supportive and having a family that understands that we bring the best of both worlds, American culture and Hmong culture. And that's what I encourage our young
in
kids
30
today.
Seconds, what about the Hmong culture should we Americans understand better?
I think the relationship of our Hmong history and the Hmong people and the contributions that we've made to the United States, understanding just even a glimpse of that would be a great step in building bridges to reducing cultural conflicts with the Hmong people.
Well, I hope your being on this program today has helped a little bit to help all of us be enlightened about the Hmong culture. It's just been a joy to have you here. You're a lovely woman, and I appreciate Zir Vang, president of the Wisconsin Asian Bar Association, being our guest here on All About Living. And much success to you as you continue in your career as an attorney here
Thank
in
you,
Wisconsin,
Kim.
And much continued success for the Hmong people and their integration in our American culture. They have much to contribute.
Thank you.
I'm Carol Kobe. Now go out and have a wonderful Memorial Weekend.